It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5, touchdown Giants, 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. That's it. You can call in or write in and join the conversation. The Giants 2 days off. They're very disappointing. 23-0 loss to the Seattle Seahawks. Players and coaches meeting the media yesterday. A lot of the conversation, Lance, having to do with a potential split or conflict in the locker room after that Brandon Myers tweet from Sunday night, which I think probably has more to do with frustration than anything else. But the team moves on. The Lions, the Giants' opponent next week, loses on Monday night. Never a good thing. You know, the team... chance of them losing two straight games at home, probably not great. Now the Giants take them on next week in that building once again. And you wonder about the Giants moving forward this week. They're going to have to pull together, overcome some of this adversity, and put a good game together against the Lions next week.
Well, the frustration's clearly building. I think that goes without saying with the type of season that they've had, whether it be the 0-6 start and then losing to the Cowboys and now a real rough performance against the Seattle Seahawks. You know, try to put it behind them and now focus on the Detroit Lions. As you mentioned, they're coming off a heartbreaking loss on Monday Night Football. They're now no longer controlling their own destiny because the Bears and the Packers have moved ahead of them in the NFC North standing. So clearly they're going to have a little chip on their shoulder to make somewhat of a statement at home in front of their home crowd. And, you know, the Lions personnel, they are one of the top five offenses in the NFL. It goes without saying. And Lions really can put points on the board. They weren't able to do that necessarily on Monday night. And their defense, their front seven specifically, is very good at getting to the quarterback. So this is going to be just another test for the Giants offensive line and an opportunity for maybe them to head in the right direction. But I don't really see things drastically changing for this team in the final two games.
The Lions are sloppy on offense. However, they are very turnover prone. Matt Stafford, tends to put the ball into harm's way. He throws the ball into coverage. Calvin Johnson has had some drops issues this year. He's also dealing with a knee. He has to get periodically drained over the course of the year. He had a chance to catch that two-point conversion in the game last night. Could not keep his feet in.
That was a bad throw, though.
No, it wasn't Calvin Johnson's fault, no question about it. Could have been a much better throw. But the Giants' defense should have some opportunities here to make some plays to maybe put the offense in a position where it could be a little bit easier to score some points. Or if the defense can get a defensive touchdown, something we haven't seen a whole lot of this year, that could help the Giants cause a lot next week as well.
Well, the giveaways are up for the Lions this season because Matthew Stafford has had trouble protecting the football, and they've been careless, and they've also been plagued by penalties. So the Lions find a way to shoot themselves in the foot. And that's something that the Giants, like you mentioned, John, can easily take advantage of. But what concerns me is really the Giants' offensive line matchup with this front seven group, because the Lions are very effective in getting to the quarterback. They got to Joe Flacco. They didn't necessarily pile up the sacks on Monday night, but they flustered him enough to affect the majority of his throws. Plus, they hit him in the leg late where it appeared maybe Joe Flacco wasn't going to be able to come out for that final drive. So this is going to be a game where I think priority number one is, regardless of how the Giants come out of this game, just do all you can to protect Eli Manning, because the last thing you want to do is put him in harm's way in a meaningless contest where you're one game away from wrapping up what has been a very disappointing season.
And James Brewer coming off that bad game on Sunday. There's some question as to whether or not he got benched or came out with an ankle injury in that game. It's probably a little of both, but I know his performance certainly was not very good in half number one, and Brandon Mosley wasn't exactly a star in half number two either in that contest. Brewer was limping around a little bit yesterday. We'll see his availability for the game on Sunday. But you're right. Nick Fairley, Ndamukong Suh, Ansah, the rookie they drafted this year in the first round. They have a lot of guys on that front line that could give the Giants offensive line a lot of problems. And when you pressure Eli, that could turn into turnovers, especially if you can't run the ball against this Lions front seven, which is pretty strong.
Well, they're effective against the run versus the pass. The pass is their weakness, but the Giants haven't been really able to move the football down the field through the air. Their strength, if anything, has been on the ground.
Plus, what if Victor Cruz doesn't play with that concussion and knee injury?
Limits your options to spread the wealth. That's why it's going to be huge for guys to step up and take advantage of some of their one-on-one opportunities, such as guys like Randall, Murphy, and Nix.
Well, more of an opportunity for guys to show the Giants they deserve to be on this roster next year, which really is going to be a big question. We could talk about all that if you want. We could talk about the game. We could look ahead to the Lions. We can still review Seattle Giants if you want. All this is on the table for you to give us a call and talk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. John Schmelk, Lance Metal. Me and Lance will be with you together till 10. I'll step away around 10 o'clock. Then Lance will take you the rest of the way and bring you home. Let's go to the phones and say what's up to Eric, all the way out in beautiful North Dakota, where I got to imagine it's probably pretty chilly today, Eric.
Yeah, very chilly there. Good morning, guys.
How are you?
Alrighty. My question was kind of concerned. What's the status of Victor Cruz? Do you think he'll play either this week, or this Sunday, or not the following, just to shattered 1,000 yards?
Well, I'm sure Victor would like to play to get the 1,000 yards. He's going to have to go through that concussion protocol. I'm sure he'll go through it tomorrow to see if he's recovered from that, you know, hard hit he took to the turf with his helmet last week. And then you got to worry about his knee, too. So I don't think they're going to rush Victor Cruz back. That'd be foolish. You're out of playoff contention. You know, 1,000 yards is great, but really what is it besides a number in a year where your team is 5-9? So if Victor Cruz is healthy, he'll play, but they're not going to rush him back, Eric, and we got to wait to see until they do those concussion tests on him tomorrow.
All righty. Thank you, guys.
All right, Eric. Thanks, Eric. Long time no speak. We've been from Eric in North Dakota in quite a while, and that's another issue here, Lance. His offense has struggled all year, and Victor Cruz, let's be honest, out of all their players on offense, offensive line, tight ends, running back, quarterback, wide receiver, Cruz has been their best player this year, and frankly, it's probably not even that close.
Oh, he separated himself from the pack. I mean, that's been clear. The problem is they just haven't been able to get him the ball in the end zone because they're missing the big play. Remember, he exploded. He had those 3 touchdowns against the Cowboys, had the 1 touchdown against Kansas City. Since then, it's been relatively quiet.
Well, let's play a game here. I think this could be fun, and we'll get back to the calls in a second. And we think Cruz has been the best player on offense. Who do you think the second best player in the Giants' offense has been this year?
I'd probably have to go with Andre Brown.
I would agree.
And Brown is even in limited games.
And he missed the first, what, 9, 8 games of the year? I'd have to go Brown as well.
I think back to Oakland.
He hasn't fumbled the ball a lot. He's controlled it. He's been pretty consistent on the ground. I agree. Now this gets tough. Who's 3? Kevin Booth?
It may have to go the direction of the offensive line. He's the only offensive lineman that I would
consider. I mean, Pugh's been a lot better since the first month. He's probably the next guy you would think about. But can you pick one of those 2 wide receivers? Can you pick Brandon Myers? You can't pick the quarterback with his 25 interceptions.
Randall had a burst at one point, but then has been relatively quiet.
He's been silent for weeks.
And remember, Manning's thrown his most interceptions when he's been targeting Reuben Randall, so that says a lot, too.
And Randall has fewer targets than both Nix and Cruz. A good amount fewer.
Brandon Myers has come along lately, but first half of the season's been a huge disappointment.
And it's not like he's had a 100-yard game here or there. He's been around 50 or 60. You'd probably have to go Boothie.
You probably do.
Which tells you something. A guy who, you know, is a average starter, probably you prefer to have him be a swing guy, but certainly a very valuable guy to the team. For him to be your third-best offensive player, it shows you why the offense has had the problems it's had this year.
And he has the most versatility on the offensive line because at least they're able to move him around. If they don't have Kevin Booth, John, just think about what type of position they're going to be in. You lose Cordell. Who's moving to center right now if you don't have a guy like Booth who can move around from that guard or center spot?
Dallas Reynolds, the guy they picked up midseason, and I don't think you want to deal with that.
No, you do not want to be dealing with that.
So if you guys have any ideas on Twitter, pop them up there. Who do you think the Giants – let's say this. Rank the Giants' top 5 offensive players this year.
Fair question.
1 through 5 on Twitter. We'll take a look at them. We'll see what you can come up with.
Well, and it would be good to do it on defense, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot more candidates in play.
I mean,
on defense,
you can come up with – you know, Tuck's a good one. Jenkins is a good one. Roll's a good one. Prince is a good one. Will Hill, Beeson. I mean, those are 6 guys right there that have had legitimately good years. So there are some options on defense. Offense, it's slim pickings, though. It really is. 201-939-4513. We did not hear from him yesterday. Maybe he stopped at the Vince Lombardi rest stop on the way back down and, you know, had a long cry, took a little nap in the back of the car. But I'm sure he's back on his porch now. Ready to recover, ready to talk some Giants football, and that's Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Boy, that was fun.
What was worse, the game or the drive?
Oh, my gosh. 23, it certainly wasn't your question about who was the offensive star. That's a depressing question
to ask.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, look, 23-0 in front of your home fans. Jeez, that must have been a fun locker room. It sounded like it for sure, huh? And I'm sure no one wanted to go near the owner's box at the end of that game.
No,
that was just awful. But look, let's give credit where credit is due. That's a good football team they played.
Oh, sure they are.
And it's a good football team playing good. It's a good football team playing good when they got something on the line. And I'm not going to mention anything about the Giants, but let me just say that's an awfully good football team. And you know, I'd like your opinion on this. That's about as good a single game performance by a defensive backfield. I don't want to say I've ever seen, but geez, that really was something.
And Len, here's the scary thing: they've been doing it all year long. That game against the Giants was not an aberration. They've been doing that to everybody they've faced all season.
Yeah, yeah. Now listen, when we talked on Friday, two things came up. One, I said to you, you know, I thought that we were going to win. I always think we're going to win, but I thought we were going to win. If we could get to second and short, we could do some business. Second series, I jumped out of my seat. We got a second and short, okay?
Yep.
Eli goes back and throws the ball to Victor, cutting across the field, wide open. Nobody would, probably the only time a receiver was open all day. And the ball goes right through his hands.
Yep, Victor heard the footsteps of the 6'3", 240-pound Cam Chancellor, and that was the end of that.
Now, there goes my second and short in being able to do some business, because I don't think we got the second and short again in the whole game.
Well, Len, hold on one second. I'll give it to you. Giants first drive, second and 10, then third and 10. Second drive for the Giants. Second and 10, second and 3. They did not convert
there
that second
go.
And 3, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's the one. That's the one where Victor, with the ball went through Victor's hands.
All right. Then you had a second and 7 on the next drive, which is not where you want to be. Second and 8 on the drive after that, not where you want to be. Second and 9, and then a false start made it second and 14. Then you had a second and 7. A holding penalty made it second and 17. So that's not exactly where you want to be. And there's your first half for you.
Well, they had a second and 1 in the third quarter that you'd have to go to be the next manageable one.
Though the Giants' first possession of the second half, second and 14, that's tremendous. God. Then you had their second and 1 that Lance mentioned. Then you have a second and 6 in the third quarter. So they had, from what I can tell here, they had they have a second and 4 here in the fourth. They had 3 second downs where it was 5 yards or less.
Oh,
just
God.
3. So that's
just
pretty pathetic, Len.
Oh, awful. Awful. I mean, just, and that was where I thought if we could get into that position, we could move the ball, we could do some business, we could get the defensive off the field, we wouldn't have to take chances, there wouldn't be turnovers, they wouldn't have the good field position. You know, all those things come into play. And, Victor's been our best player. I'm glad he's on our team. I'm looking forward to seeing him for the next 5 or 6 years. And I'm not going to harp on it, but it probably wouldn't have made any difference anyway. But Victor's got to—he's got to help out there, guys. He's got to catch that ball. I mean, it's just—he's got to catch that ball. While I raved about Seattle, I want to mention a couple of Giants.
Sure.
I thought have been playing very well and played well on Sunday. And I want to start with Linville, because last week we talked about re-upping Linville, and I said, tell me one play where he's really made a difference all year long. He's been a cog in the middle, 4 or 5 tackles. He's playing great run defense and so forth. You know, that that sack in the red zone, inside the 10, that third down sack on Wilson, that was a big play. Good for you, Linville. And you know, this is a guy who, you know, he can make a difference. I want him to be on the Giants next year, and I just wanted to point out, because I had said there hadn't been an impact play. We couldn't remember an impact play that he made, and I just wanted to point out on Sunday that was a huge play in the red zone that he made. you know, Keith Rivers, I know the stats don't pile up and so forth, but, you know, Keith Rivers is right in that range, 4 to 8 year veteran. I think he has a lot to do with this run defense.
I don't.
You don't think so?
Len, do you know why? He just doesn't play that many snaps. I mean, he's not really on the field all that much. And frankly, a lot of the times now, recently, they've been playing their three starting linebackers with Paysinger and Jaquan Williams on the field with Beeson. I just don't think Rivers has been on the field enough. I can try to find his snap count this year and play count per game. But, Lance, feel free to disagree with me if you think I'm wrong, but I just don't see Rivers out there on the field all that much.
They don't use a lot of three linebacker sets. Keep that in mind, too. And for the time that he was in there, I don't really see him as an impact guy.
If you look at the stats, I just think this guy has played well enough, and he's right there, you know, a veteran. I'm not saying we break the bank on this guy, but and we didn't last year when we brought him back. But I would like to see Keith Rivers on this team next year. Let me move on to one other player.
Well, Led, before you move on, I think that's reasonable, though, if that's what you want. I mean, they can afford to bring him back. I don't think he's going to get a huge type of interest on the open market.
I don't think so. And I personally will be happy with Keith Rivers on the team. You can't have Pro Bowlers at every position. I'm just saying, in my opinion, he provides something as part of that overall scheme on defense. And it may not be large numbers, but I think he's helping out. And let me give you one more guy, and this has been really one of the surprises, and I think Jerry Reese did a great job with this. Every time Ryan Mundy gets on the field, good things happen, guys. You know, we're going to have to, he's on a one-year contract. Again, I'm not talking about Pro Bowlers here, and I think you know that. I'm not going there. I'm just saying he brings that Steeler mentality to that defensive backfield. I like Ryan Mundy. Now, do I like him ahead of Hill and Roll? No, but I think this guy has performed. I think we're going to have trouble getting him back again. Other people are going to notice. And let me say one more. Let me say something.
Well, Len, he also may be interested, keep in mind, for a starting gig. And that's probably why he may get interest elsewhere, because there's other teams that could use him as a starter.
And remember, Stevie Brown could be back, too, and that could limit him even more in terms of playing defense for the Giants.
Yeah, and you got a draft choice from this year who plays safety also. Yeah, so I understand that. I'm just saying, Jerry, he exceeded expectations, I think. Again, remember, I'm not putting him in the Pro Bowl. That's not where I'm going with this. I'm just saying, this was a guy who, when he got on the field, you know, intercepting early in the season, played three or four games, then Hill came in, who played terrific, no question. But I like that pickup by Jerry. That was a good pickup. If for no other reason, you know, bottom line, he brings a mentality that, you know, we got to see more of. Maybe he can even transfer to the, you know, the offensive side. You know, not much else to say. I mean, look at who I'm picking. You know, Ryan Mundy, Keith Rivers, Linville, great, great job, et cetera. It's just been that kind of season. But, I was certainly wrong about it. You remember back to our conversations, I had him winning 11 games. But I did check Sports Illustrated's annual.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season, had him 9-7 and winning the East.
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't think 8-8 and 9-7 and somewhere in that range is unrealistic. I mean, if this offense gives you anything, Len, I don't think anybody thought this offense would be as bad as it's been. They probably would have won 8 or 9 games.
All right, let me say one kudos
real quick
to you guys and your show yesterday.
All right, take your time.
Okay, I was still a little, I couldn't call in. I was still a little upset, so. I waited, and I did hear the replay of the show and everything like that. You guys, there was one, and I'm sure it was almost like a throwaway line, but it resonated because I've been thinking about this for a while. You guys intimated that there may be some guys on this team who can't play in the NFL. You know, forget the effort part, forget the pride part. Bottom line is, and they got 2 games to prove us wrong. We got some guys on the offensive side of the ball who can't play in this league.
I hear you.
I'm not absolving Eli. I'm not absolving Hakeem Nicks, who, by the way, you know, if he's drifting through this season, other general managers are noticing.
Exactly. They will see that on tape just like we are.
Yeah, I mean, really, really. So, I mean, there are some guys. When the season is over, we'll play Jerry Reese and figure out who those guys are. But it's becoming evident. I mean, the holes on this team, when you play a team like Seattle, you know, it really shows.
Thanks for the call, Len.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Have a good one. And look, I think that's the bottom line. The offense simply ran up against a defense that was a lot better than them. And that's what happens. You get shut out. Giants shut out twice this year. No other NFL team has been shut out all season. I think that about sums it up.
And then you have to go back to also last season where they were shut out too late in the year. It's a bad trend.
Bad trend. 201-939-4513. Wes is in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Wes, what's going on?
What's going on, buddy?
Wes, hey. How are you?
It's good, good. I want to talk about Eli, and I always talk about him. You see me talking about him on Twitter and you know.
Wes, good to have you call in, buddy.
That's right. I don't hide on Twitter like the Vic guy thought I do. Anyways, I want to talk about Eli. Here we go. Guys, I don't understand at what point you pull the plug on this guy. I mean, I understand. I appreciate everything he's done. Like I told you in week four, I respect Eli. I know his credentials. I know everything there is to know about him. I don't understand what point do you say enough's enough? We've seen enough. I mean, guys, this is his third year leading the league in interceptions in 10 years. He's a veteran quarterback. This should not happen. And we could go and we could blame it on Gilbride. We could blame it on the offensive line, which is poor, which is I see it. It's not good. But the times he has had time versus poor defenses, he's done zip, guys. He's done zip. He can't even throw. Again, every quarterback in the league can throw against the Dallas Cowboys, but Eli Manning. It's not good. And the problem I have is, at what point do you say, okay, I know Nassib is not the – I'm not saying Nassib's the answer. I don't think anybody is. But, Jesus, you reached up in the fourth round to grab him when we clearly needed O-line at the time or a linebacker. He made it a point to reach for Nassib. Put the kid in. We got two games. We've got nothing to lose at this point, guys. There's not. In week four, when I called up, you said, well, does Eli Manning give you a better chance to win? Does Nassib, or you mentioned Geno Smith. Well, yeah, you're right at that time, but now you're not. It's time. You got Nassib on inactive. Why is he on inactive? If he doesn't get the playbook by week, you know, we're in week 16, he doesn't understand the playbook. It's his only job, and he can't teach. I don't understand these guys. You got Robinson, who's a project. He don't understand the playbook. He can't get on the field. Rudy Randall barely understands the playbook. Mario Manningham couldn't understand the playbook. Well, if nobody can understand the playbook, well, I don't know what to say. These guys are professionals here. You got to get them on the field. The season's over. Let's see what we have. And that's all I got to say, guys. I want to see what we have in Nassib before we throw the talent on him after he hasn't even taken a snap yet. Well, I mean, who cares about this streak? I'm tired of this Eli was keeping it's like the good old boy system. I'm just tired of watching it. And a lot of Giants fans are. And I'm sorry for Rand, guys. I had enough of him. I'm tired of it.
Well, Wes, I understand where you're coming from, but even if you see what you can get out of Nassib, are you realistically going to start him next season? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I mean,
Wes, come on.
Probably not.
Well, Wes, seriously, just from a financial perspective, you can't. I mean, Eli Manning right now is still owed more than $40 million in that contract, and I think a lot of that is probably guaranteed. So if let's just say theoretically, Wes is the GM of the Giants, and you decide, look, I want to cut Eli Manning. I want to start over. I want to blow this thing up theoretically. You're going to have probably anywhere between $20 and $30 million of dead money on your cap next year, and you are completely hampering your team without even knowing who your next quarterback is going to be. So to your original question, which is when do you pull the plug, when do you decide to move on, here's the bottom line. Eli has to be your quarterback next year, if anything, just for economic reasons. Now, if after next year you have another, you know, 25 interception season, can you deal with maybe 1 year of some dead money? Maybe you can deal with that, and at that point maybe have a better feel for Nassib, or you know somebody else you can bring in. Maybe you draft somebody. Who knows? There's a million different ways you can go about it. But
yeah,
there's no way.
With this guy.
There's no way just from a financial perspective, you can move on from your starting quarterback, Eli Manning, next year. That's my answer to your question of when do you pull the plug.
Well, what about, isn't his contract up? I thought his contract is done next year.
He has two more years. Next year, I think his cap number's around $25 million, and the year after that, his cap number's around $20 million. In fact, Wes, what you should do, Ralph Vacchiano of the Daily News actually wrote a big article about this very issue this morning in the Daily News. Go online when you have a chance today, check it out, and I think it'll enlighten you a little bit more. And it might some of it might frustrate you, but the conclusion it came to is that they're probably going to extend him sooner than later to spread that money out. But I suggest you read the article, and it'll give you a little bit more information in terms of his salary situation, all right?
All right, guys. Let me one more thing before
sure.
I go. If they do extend him, can't they? Is there any way they can put an incentive contract in with him? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if he doesn't play poorly, then they can just cut him. I mean, can't they just do that when they do extend him? I mean, they're just going to extend him and give him another $80 million, $90 million to throw another 80 picks for us in the next 4 years? Because it's going to happen, guys.
Well, Wes, there are ways to structure a contract where, you know, money is guaranteed. You set it up in roster bonuses. So you can get out of a contract early and avoid even money that's considered guaranteed, like a roster bonus. If you put that further down the contract, you can cut bait before then and then save a lot on the deal. I think the Cowboys contract with Sean Lee is very similar to that, where if he didn't play X number of games in his first few years of his contract extension, the last 2 years the Cowboys can get out of him without owing him a lot of that money. So there is a way to structure the contract that way. Wes, we appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it, man.
Thank you, guys.
And we appreciate you. And we appreciate Wes's passion because, frankly, he seemed a lot – and this is why Twitter, I think, is a flawed medium in a lot of ways sometimes. You see Wes's tweets, there's a lot of capital letters. He's all excited. He's going at it with people. And, you know, on Twitter at times he can seem a little unreasonable. But a lot of the stuff he said there – you know, some stuff I don't agree with. Like, I don't think playing Nassib this year is a good idea because I don't think he's ready. And I think if you put a guy in like Nassib behind a bad offensive line before he's ready, you actually hurt his development more than you help it. So – the Giants coaches see him in practice every day. If they don't think he's ready, I have to trust them that he's not ready. So I disagree with him in that respect. But a lot of the other stuff he said is not unreasonable. It's hard to have a veteran quarterback on your team that's going to be a $25 million cap hit next year. $25 million. That's probably the largest, if not one of the top three largest cap numbers in football next year. And he had a quarterback rating that's probably barely at 80 at this point. I'm curious what it is. Can you look that up, Lance? See what his quarterback rating is right now. I bet you it's barely at 80, and he leads the league in interceptions. It's a tough thing to reconcile that money figure with the production he's given this year. Now, we've talked about it. It's not all his fault. Offensive line, receivers, offense, running game, all that stuff. 100% true. Not going to argue with it. It's all true. But if you're going to give that large percentage of your cap space to one guy, you have to get better production if you want your team to be good. It's simply economics.
But that's the trend across the NFL. All of these quarterbacks are getting big money because teams want to find that franchise quarterback and they need to lock them up.
Well, no question
about
it.
That's just the nature of the league right now. It's not as if the Giants have been doing anything differently than any other team.
Right, but the quarterbacks then have to play like a franchise quarterback.
Absolutely. Listen, you invest that type of money, you want a return.
Do you think Joe Flacco's earned his $20 million, $40 million guaranteed contract this year? I don't think Joe Flacco's been great. Then again, he doesn't have great wide receivers around him. His
offensive
line hasn't been great.
Yeah.
So like I'm saying, there's mitigating factors. But if you're a team and you invest that much of your cap into one guy, that better be the strength of your team. Because you're hindering yourself everywhere else in terms of improving your roster.
Well, that's also why you need to do much better in the draft. Because if you're going to lock that type of money up in one position, you're not going to have enough flexibility to go out and spend money to patch up other holes. Therefore, you do your heavy lifting through the draft. Len brought up the Seahawks, and he was commending how, wow, they really separate themselves from the rest of the league. And what have we been highlighting? 8 of their 11 defensive starters drafted between rounds 3 and 6, or they were undrafted. So you can afford to lock up guys like Russell Wilson when they play out their rookie contract. Why? Because the heart and soul of your team is built through the draft. Is the heart and soul of this Giants team built through the draft? No. Because we've gone over each and every draft every season, and they barely can retain anybody between rounds 3 and round 7. And those are guys that are not costing you a lot of money, but they're not impactful players. So that needs to change. And if that changes, then you're not too worried about Eli Manning making the type of money that he's making, because at least you know, okay, we've got a lot of money tied up in our quarterback, but we have other players that are actually delivering for us. You can't say that about this Giants team right now. That's the big thing.
I'm just happy we got to put a voice to Wes, who's been he's one of our look. He's enthusiastic. He's fiery. We love that. He's a big Giants fan. He always gets into it with everybody else on our hashtag Giants chat channel. And it's good to hear Wes's voice and get his take.
Well, let's hear Stu step up to the plate next. How about that?
You want to see Stu?
Well, you calling out Wes, and Wes manned up and he called in. Stu is very talkative on Twitter. So let's see Stu put his mouth to the phone and chime in on the
You know what I want to see? I want to see one of the Farmer brothers call it. I want to see Nick or Mike, who are two of our most loyal tweeters. I want to see them give us a call, too. We're calling everybody out.
It would be nice to hear
Giants.
From everybody. Listen, you can only take so much away from Twitter, as I always say. By the way, Manning's rating is just under 70, 69.7.
It's under 70?
Yeah. Oh, come on. 25 interceptions.
What's his completion percentage? 58%? 57% at this point?
Completion percentage
is 58.6.
58? No. He hasn't had this low of a completion percentage since, the last two seasons. This is the second year in a row where he could finish under 60. But if you go back even more, you'd have to go back to 2007. And believe it or not, they won a Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, but again, much like we've talked about a lot, that was as much of the defense that year than anything else. But
and he had 20 interceptions that season, too, 2007.
3,400 yards. He's not going to get over 4,000 this year. He did that 3 years in a row. Oof. Only seven. And even his yards per attempt is down. It's his fewest yards per attempt since 2008.
Oh, they're lacking the big play.
Man. Four fumbles.
It's been rough. It's not pretty.
Bad,
if you didn't watch any
numbers.
Giants games and you just looked at his numbers, you'd be like, what happened to Eli Manning? You really would. And you rightfully can ask that question. Been very ugly.
201-939-4513. Lance, I'm going to hand over the reins to the phone calls to you. I'm happy I was on when Wes called him. I'm very excited that he got
to
in.
Squeeze him in.
I'm very excited about that. But I'm going to hand this off to Lance. I have to go find out some more about the Detroit Lions. I will come back in for the end of the show if I can.
With some nuggets, I assume.
I have some nuggets on their offense that I decided not to drop today. We'll do it on Friday. And
there'll be plenty of time
good
to
luck.
Talk
we
about
the Lions.
We got
three callers up. Guys, have fun. Appreciate the time.
All right, John. Let's head back to lines 888. Man, I'm about to give out my Sirius show number. You believe that? I tell you, man, I am tired.
See, I put the headset down for a second, and Meadow gives out the wrong number. Are you sure you're okay?
Oh, I think
here?
I can recover.
Can you handle it?
The turnarounds. Now, get it to me here.
201-939-4513. Now let's try it.
I think I can get that out. 201-939-4513.
Now I'm going to walk away.
Do not call an 888 number. All right. Let's head back to the lines. What a morning. We go to Raldi in Bayshore. Raldi, what's happening?
Morning, Lance. That was funny right there.
We try to provide some comic relief here.
Yeah, it's a very disappointing season with the play of Eli Manning. It's, frustrating, with the just like you guys were saying, with the money that he's making, It almost reminded me of bad memories of, the way Dave Brown played. That's how Eli Manning is playing, which is a bad memory for me to even, try to remember. But moving forward, I hope, this offseason Eli Manning, works hard at, his craft and get better, for next season. Then for the first time in a long time, I don't know if you could agree with me, Lance, I feel, happy with the way the secondary is. Years past, during the offseason, I always said, we got to, step up in our, draft, for the secondary. But I feel confident in the secondary, especially if we're going to get Stevie Brown back. Now, question for you. Do you think they would be able to play three safeties next year?
Well, I think they could get away with that depending on the opposition that they go up against. But you still need a reliable corner opposite Prince Amukamara.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get away with just saying, okay, we're going to have three safeties and maybe we can move Roland to the nickel, because Roll's stronger out of that safety spot as opposed to the nickel spot. So you really don't want to get in the habit of moving a safety to match up with a corner constantly, because eventually, Roldy, you're going to get a mismatch in favor of the opposition. So I think that's a very risky strategy to have. I think the secondary, in terms of you saying that you've been happy with the progress, Prince is coming along. He finally had an offseason where he was fully healthy. But I still think right now, if I looked at this group on paper, they need another corner that you can say, hey, each and every game he's making some plays that have been contributing to wins.
And Corey Webster, is he coming back next year?
I would say that's highly doubtful. You know, what has Corey Webster done this season that would warrant him to get a new contract? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's got nothing to do with him being a bad person or being a bad locker room. It's just a matter of, you know, Roldy can't stay healthy. And what is it good to eat up a roster spot for a guy that's never going to play?
And again, as far as the defensive line, and I'm looking at the Seattle, you know, Seahawks defense, man, I want the Giants to get like that next year. I want them to be physical and you know, hungry and you know, attack guys, you know. And I don't think we do a lot of blitzing that much, you know. I think we should, you know, get back to blitzing a little bit more, especially if the defensive line is not getting back to the quarterback. Yeah, I think, you know, that's what we should do. I mean, this offseason, I mean, during the draft, you think they're going to draft a defensive lineman also?
I think they'll probably
concentrate more on the offense, but defense.
They may head in that direction, but I think offensive line is a bigger priority in the early rounds. You could take a defensive lineman, Roldy, but I wouldn't necessarily go for one in the first round or the second round. I would wait a little bit, and maybe you could get a gem later on. But, you know, the biggest priority right now is you got to fill up some voids in that offensive line, and you're talking about as many as maybe three players, at least two. You've got to address that in the draft. You can't rely on free agency answering the call there.
But I felt happy when we signed, you know, Kareem McKenzie, and that worked out well during free agency. We didn't have to, you know, draft, you know, that year.
And they also brought in Sean O'Hara, too. So they have had success with free agency. You're 100% right.
You're right.
But here's the other flip side to that, Roldy. I didn't mean to cut you off there. That was also under the Ernie Accorsi umbrella.
Yeah, that's true.
What has Jerry Reese done recently to show that he can bring in an impactful offensive lineman through free agency? So you got to keep that in mind. You're right. They do have a good track record, the Giants, but that was under the old regime. We have yet to see that under the new regime.
All right. Thanks a lot, Lance. That's
you
all
got it, Roldy. Always good chatting with you. Thanks for chiming in. 201-939. See, I almost did it again. Unbelievable. 201-939-4513. I don't know why I have another number in my head, but we'll eventually work out the kinks as this show continues. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We go to our good friend Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, what's happening, Lance? How's it going today, buddy?
Doing well, Steve. How about yourself?
All right. Listen, I tried to get through yesterday, but I just couldn't keep down. I had a busy day, but I was definitely tuned in. Listen, I know the offensive line has played pretty bad, you know, and I think that's, you know, part mostly on the players, partly on the play calling, you know, but I definitely don't think we should give extension to Eli at this time. I'm just, you know, I feel like we've been held hostage enough for the last couple of years with his bad play. I don't really think that the right thing to do would be to extend him just to, you know, to free up some cap space. I'm not saying cut the guy or bench him next year, you know, but certainly we need to see if he can, he can turn around. I personally don't think he's going to. And I think, you know, he's a 10-year veteran. The mistakes he's making, you know, are really, I mean, it's conscious decisions he keeps making time in and time and over again. You know, he's just not handling the pressure very well. I mean, his confidence, his shot, you know, just the 7-step drop, it just does not fit his athleticism. And for whatever reason, Kevin Gilbride has not made any changes. So.
Well, Steve, here's the X factor in all this, and I understand that some of the signs you're seeing, you're not confident that he's going to turn things around. But Philip Rivers, who's also up there in the same age category as Manning and the same type of experience, gets a new head coach, new type of offensive system this season. And Philip Rivers has had trouble protecting the football and also had offensive line issues. They bring in some new personnel. Look at the type of year Philip Rivers is having. So perhaps if the Giants decide to go in the direction of bringing in a new coordinator, patching up the offensive line, two things that I think are reasonable to ask for and reasonable to receive, maybe that's the two factors that helps Eli Manning get back on track, regardless of how much he has left in the tank.
Well, I would hope so, too, and I definitely agree with that approach. You know, like I was saying, you know, early last week, you know, I mean, he's just had one of the best offensive lines in football for a long time. People forget what he was sacked like 19 times last year. You know, so we've been consistently good on the offensive line. And You know, it's really hard to, you know, to spread the talent out. You know, so I think Jerry Reese has done a good job, but I definitely think the offensive line fell off, you know, over the last 2 years. So, you know, I am hopeful that our Eli can turn it around, but I just don't think that giving him an extension is the right thing to do right now.
And that's a reasonable thing to say, Steve. I don't disagree with you. I don't think it's quite smart to all of a sudden throw a lot of money his way when he's coming off arguably one of his worst seasons of all time. So I don't think there's that urgency factor there at all.
I just think it sends the wrong, you know, the impression to the rest of the team as well, too. So, you know, but you know, still going on the offense, you know, I'm an Andre Brand fan. I have been for the last couple of years. You know, I was very excited to, you know he was coming back this year. But, you know, I've really been looking at him closely, and I certainly want to keep him around. But he's not the answer for us. So hopefully Wilson will get, you know, healthy. I think if Wilson would have stayed healthy the whole year, we probably would have won at least two more games. So, you know, I'm hoping we bring in, you know, another running back. You know, I don't think Hillis is the answer, and unfortunately Jacobs can't stay healthy. So I really don't know if you can, you know, touch on, you know, the health of Wilson a little bit. You know what's going on with this guy as far as his neck is concerned?
Has it been really any major updates? They're going to continue to have him undergo testing as they head into the offseason, and then they'll determine, you know, whether or not he can get back on the field, at least get through a workout or two. You know, right now, I would say there's a big question mark next to David Wilson's name. I mean, they really don't know what to expect until they get into the heart of the offseason and determine whether or not he can step on the playing field. You know, all that's happening now is just speculation, and, you know, the doctors are taking a look at him week in and week out. But right now, you know, to pencil him in and say that he's definitely going to be a big playmaker in the lineup, you know, I would think that would be a little premature. More of a reason why what you were getting at, Steve, they need to look at the running back situation and determine, you know, do you want to bring back Andre Brown? And even if you bring back Andre Brown, not knowing what David Wilson's status is, you still need to maybe bring in another running back who can, you know, at least give you X amount of carries and, you know, be solid in terms of run blocking. So that's another area aside from the offensive line that could have a very different look next season.
Okay, last thing I wanted to touch on, Lance, is the linebacker. First of all, I want to say I'm happy with our safety situation. I'm also a Ryan Mundy fan. Hopefully we can keep him here under a reasonable price, but, you know, between Will Hill and Stevie Brown and obviously Antoine Rowe, I think we're pretty much set, you know, with Stevie Brown coming in off the bench and as well as Mundy, especially Mundy on special teams as well. But, you know, what concerns me the most is, you know, I'm definitely, you know, I'm not a Jaquan Williams fan at all. I think we need to let the guy go. And Rivers hasn't done a lot, but, I mean, I think just somebody, you know, is worth keeping if we can't find a better replacement at a decent price. But I just, you know, I want to know what your thoughts on Jaquan Williams, because, I mean, I'm just not seeing anything out of the guy, really, that tells me he should even be playing the linebacker position. I think Paysinger, you know, has outplayed him, especially off the bench, and he seems to be getting a little bit more physical as the season goes along. The only thing that doesn't bother me about Paysinger is he's just a little bit too humble, you know, just too willing, giving up his jersey, giving up his spot. No fight, you know, I appreciate him being a team guy, but I'd rather see him be just a little bit more selfish and a little bit more aggressive and keep hitting the weights, just hitting the heart. So, listen, I'm listening to remarks off Jaquan off air. Now, thanks for taking my call as usual, and, you know, hopefully we can finish this season, you know, with the win.
All right, Steve. Always good hearing from you. It would be nice if they got back on track in these final two games just to give the fan base and at least the organization some sense of momentum and some positives to take with them into the offseason. As far as Jaquan Williams is concerned, you know, he's not making a great deal of money, so it's not as if it's putting strain on the salary cap, and he's going to be then a free agent in 2015. So he has one more year left on his deal. You know, unless they all of a sudden bring in a guy that's going to take his roster spot, I would assume that he's somewhat secure. Spencer Paysinger, who has been getting more and more playing time down the stretch, they've been seeing that. That's why they've been playing him more often. Remember, Paysinger started out in the starting group. Then all of a sudden, he loses his job, becomes primarily a special teams guy. And the last few games, you know, he's been involved in some hard hits up the gut, so they've rewarded him as a result. And, you know, as Steve mentioned, he's not a big-time vocal guy. He's not, you know, a guy with that killer instinct from a verbal perspective. That should not necessarily overlook the fact that the guy goes out there and plays hard. So, you know, I mean, I think that he has earned additional playing time. I don't know long-term if he's necessarily the answer. You can never have enough depth, though, when it comes to this linebacker situation. Just think about all the injuries that they have suffered over the last few seasons. So they need a Spencer Paysinger. They need a Jaquan Williams, at least right now. They bring in some different personnel in the offseason. Then that helps foster competition. And remember, they had competition this offseason. But what happened all of a sudden? Dan Connor goes down very early in the season. Mark Herzlich gets more of an opportunity. He clearly hasn't panned out. You lose that competition. So therefore, the Giants had to essentially turn to the same group of three guys. They get a cluster of linebackers in here. Then all of a sudden, you're going to have guys going neck and neck each and every practice, each and every game. That's what you want. Because that's the only way to get the team better. Unfortunately, this team has been struck by the injury bug just about everywhere, maybe with the exception of the safety spot. So as a result, guys who are on the depth chart, who probably don't really deserve to play to begin with, they're being plugged in. Why? Who else are the Giants turning to? You lost two centers. You have to move Kevin Booth to center. So what does that mean? That opens the door for James Brewer. Brewer gets hurt. Who are you turning to? You know, the options are limited. That's why a lot of these guys are playing right now. And that's also why the level of production is nowhere near where it should be. You don't get struck by the injury bug or you have a better depth chart. We're not talking about why is this guy on the field? Why are they bringing this guy back? You need the competition because the competition helps weed out the guys that do not belong on this roster. They don't have that luxury right now. That's been a big issue throughout the course of this season. 201-939-4513. Boy, I am having major issues with telephone numbers this morning. I don't know what is going on with me, and I can't even come up with a valid excuse. 201-939-4513. We'll eventually get it right. Let's go to Andrew in New Jersey. Andrew, what's happening?
Cruz, he's earning his money, and Eli should give some of his salary over to Cruz because that pass was way high, so Cruz took a shot, man. You know, that was definitely a tough hit, and I was just thinking back, David Tyree, he made the catch, and Cruz was right on the cusp of making the, you know, amazing all-time great catch, but even though the rule says it's not a catch, still one of the greatest plays, you know, by a receiver. And I wanted to say, Kurt Warner, bring him out of retirement. No, you don't have to comment. I'll give you my offensive player that I want to see back. But I just want to say, I always liked Kurt Warner, and I thought it would have been good if Eli, like Romo, was, you know, waited for 3 years. We could have had Hall of Famer. But when Warner was here in the second half of that season, he wouldn't get rid of the ball. He publicly stated that he's not going to throw the ball away. He'd rather take a sack. Andrew Sr. was yelling at the TV because Warner sometimes, when you get hit from, you don't see the guy coming, but the guy would have 10 yards, the linebacker, he's running, and Warner would just protect the ball and go down instead of throwing it away. So he kind of, you know, ruined it for himself. But Jerry Reese, people were dumping on him, but really Ernie Accossi, he was the GM after George Young, not Jerry Reese, for a good 10 or 15 years. And I'll leave you with this before I put Andrew Sr. on. I like Hillis. That, you know, I definitely want to see him back, and he totally reminds me of Brandon Jacobs when Jacobs is on his game. And I think he's even a little better than Jacobs because he's slightly shorter, and I think that gives him an advantage of leverage, and he could get lower. He gets low, even though he's a big guy, he could get low. And in that particular game, you know, the offense, obviously they weren't going to win with that offense, but when the line's playing so poorly, you should have someone like Hillis in there who's a big bruiser, who could take the punishment, who could deliver the blow. He's like a Larry Zonka type. So when you're getting beat up, you don't want David Wilson or even Andre Brown, who's kind of in between size. You want a big smash-mouth guy that could punish and punish. But I hope they bring him back. And I'll put Andrew Sr. on before I say something dumber than what I said about Kurt Warner.
All right, let's hear from Andrew Sr.
Good morning. Listen, what happened to these guys that are all on Eli? Give the guy a break. The guy is a good, smart quarterback. If you give him the opportunity, put people in front of him, he'll deliver every time. But what happened to the faith? Come on, Giant fans. Let's go. Bye-bye.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. And Andrew Jr., I'm assuming, is going to try to jump back on here. Andrew, all right, make it quick because I got another number of calls I want to get to. All right, apparently we lost both of them. I thought Andrew was going to jump back on and say something stupider than he said, but apparently he teased us and he decided to hang up here. But appreciate the phone call from the two Andrews. And with respect to the whole Eli Manning debate, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about it in the final two games and heading into the offseason, and, you know, there's frustration building up amongst Giants fans, and I think you have one group that says you have to take into consideration all that has gone wrong around Eli Manning, brush it off as a bad season. Can't overlook what he's given this franchise, what he's given this organization, and he'll be able to bounce back. And then there's the other side of the group that thinks, well, this is maybe the sign of him turning to somewhat of a downhill, and he's not going to be able to regroup because he's seen better days. It's impossible to determine which direction Eli Manning is headed because we can't necessarily predict the future, but if you do take into consideration what he was able to work with earlier in his career and what he had to work with this season, it would stand to reason that it's reasonable to assume he will be able to bounce back, assuming the Giants, of course, address the areas of need. You know, if they have him play behind a suspect offensive line, of course he's not going to improve. He's not going to have enough time to throw the football. And it also falls on his shoulders as a quarterback, whether you're a 10-year vet or you're a 2-year guy, you know, you need to really step back, self-evaluate. And that's the type of offseason Eli Manning is going to have, where he really needs to determine, okay, what can I do better to improve as a quarterback? It's not necessarily just the things that are around me. Be my decision-making, my form, the way I go about calling audibles, you know, a lot of different things. I think he's gotten to the point in his career where he really needs to have that type of conversation, even with himself. You bring in new personnel, perhaps you change coordinators. I think that's going to bode very well for Eli Manning. But it is a disturbing aspect, and I know Wes brought this up, and I'm not trying to give him more ammunition and add fuel to the fire, but, you know, when you do look at Eli Manning's career, he has led the league in interceptions, potentially 3 times. This season's not necessarily over, and Geno Smith, who knows what he's going to do in the final 2 games. He's the closest to Eli Manning, but, you know, that's a troubling aspect. You don't want a top-notch quarterback leading the league in interceptions for that many seasons. Now, that, at least, he's had on his resume. But he's also had a lot of other positives on his resume, where he's come up with clutch plays, he's come up with big plays, he's put receivers in positions to succeed. You can't necessarily doubt that he can't get back to that. It's just a matter of improving things around him, which the Giants weren't able to do during the middle of this year because they didn't have the luxury to do that. Let's head back to the lines. We got Jamal in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Jamal, what's happening?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Doing well, Jamal. What you got?
I got two things. First, I want to know, what's the likelihood of getting Roll and Tuck back for next year? And in the draft, I don't know if y'all been looking at it yet, what linemen will be good candidates to pick up, because it looks like we'll probably have at least not top 10, but maybe a 15th pick. Between the first and 15th pick, we'll probably be in somewhere in that range. And what guys will we be looking at in holes, meaning guard or tackle-wise, should we be looking at? And I'll just leave you with that. All right, thanks.
All right, Jamal, thanks for the phone call. Number one, Roll is not a free agent, so they don't have to worry about keeping him. He's already on the books for next season, so that's not going to be an issue. In terms of Tuck, I think that he's done enough to warrant a new contract. I doubt that he wants to leave, and I doubt that he's going to get a great deal of interest outside of the Giants organization. So as long as the money works out and Tuck wants to play a couple of more seasons, I think they'll be able to hammer out a new deal. And I think that Tuck has shown that he has more gas in the tank, and that as long as he has some help around him, he can take full advantage of those plays. With respect to the draft and what offensive linemen they may go after, to be totally honest with you, haven't done a great deal of homework on this class, so for me to throw out a name here or there would be really premature. In terms of generics, you know, they're going to look at every possible option, whether it be a tackle, whether it be a guard, whether it be a center. They're not going to necessarily just focus on one position. Why? Because they need help in all positions on the offensive line. Now, outside of Justin Pugh, I don't know if everyone can say that their jobs are solidified. Yes, Will Beatty, they've invested a great deal of money, so it's highly unlikely that they're just going to part ways with him. But could it be possible that they move Beatty around? That's speculation at this point. I think they see him primarily as a left tackle. I don't think they see him at another position. And part of that is because of his physical characteristics and his play. I don't know if you can move him to the right side. Is he really a bulldozer type of run blocker? Do you consider that type of title with a guy like Will Beatty? Hasn't necessarily proven that. Pugh, you can move to guard. You know, that's an opportunity to perhaps make some tweaks. But that means that you're going to have to bring in a legitimate tackle. And is Kevin Booth coming back? Kevin Booth's a free agent. They've had that luxury to turn to Kevin Booth each and every season because they've given him one-year deals. But, you know, maybe somebody looks at Kevin Booth and says, hey, we've got an issue at center. We've got an issue at guard. We want to throw a lot of money at Kevin Booth. Now, that could happen. There's a lot of teams outside of the Giants that have major offensive line issues. So there's going to be some competition. Kevin Booth is the one guy that there could be some competition for. So the Giants need to say to themselves, do we want to throw X amount of dollars at Kevin Booth? Or do we want to say, you know what? We'll allow him to walk and we'll try to get younger and maybe we'll bring in another veteran. These are going to be some tough decisions. But remember, finances are going to dictate some of these moves. Because this is not the type of offseason where you say, our major issue is offensive line, everything else will fall into place. No. Your major issues are just about everywhere. Tight end you may need to address depending on what they decide to do with Brandon Myers. Running backs, personnel could change there. Wide receiver, depending on Akeem Nicks. And then on defense, there's going to be some free agents. They may need to bring in another defensive lineman. Corner you need to address. Safety is probably the only spot on defense where I would say you can understand where they're going to go next season. And you pretty much have a good idea of what the depth chart's going to look like. Outside of that, there's a lot of question marks and a lot of change probably heading the way of the Giants roster. Let's head back to the lines. Larry is in Tokyo, Japan. Larry, what's happening?
Hey, everything's cool. How you doing, man?
Doing well, Larry. What you got?
Okay, well, let me just get my credentials straight. I've been a Giants fan for more than 50 years. I think the first quarterback I saw was Connerly, and then Tittle, I guess. So I'm kind of in the same league as Andrew Senior.
Very nice. So what you got, Larry?
Okay, but I got to agree with you, old Andrew. I don't think that Eli is the problem. I think the big problem is Jerry Reese. And I think I have to just call it pure arrogance in, number one, picking Nassib, trying to play with the big boys, going to groom somebody and try to flog him down the line. I think he's the person that people don't want to play for. I know that OC had all sorts of different issues, but OC didn't want to play for him. He dumped people like Colefield. I'd say that Nix doesn't want to play for him.
I don't think you really need to worry about playing for the GM, Larry. I buy your point that he doesn't have a great track record with respect to the draft and, you know, maybe wise decisions in free agency, but I don't think the players look at it where they're unwilling to play for Reese. They got to play for Tom Coughlin. They got to play for each other. You only need to worry about Jerry Reese rewarding you with a good financial deal. You don't need to worry about playing for him.
Okay, well, let's also talk about that ridiculous, in Japanese we call chutzpah. I don't know if you speak that much Japanese, but that...
Well, chutzpah is also a word within another language, but I do understand the word. I hear where you're going.
I'm teasing. I think another bad move is getting rid of Carr. In place of Painter, I think for a few extra bucks, Carr was a real good ally for Eli. Speaking of Eli, it's a shame they lost. I've heard mentioned on the program before that when they lost, was it Sullivan who used to be the quarterback coach?
Mike Sullivan, correct, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Right, when they lost him, Manning's production performance went way down. And basically, Reese just didn't hire enough horses.
Well, that has been an issue, and I think it's rearing its ugly head this season, where you don't have a great deal of depth, and the talent pool around Eli Manning is suspect at certain positions. So, you know, that's a valid point, and the fact that they've had some turnover in terms of the coaching staff surrounding Eli specifically. Not necessarily the offensive coordinator, but Mike Sullivan was very good in terms of the development of quarterbacks. And look at what he's done in Tampa Bay. Josh Freeman had a good season initially. Mike Glennon has been very productive as a rookie. So that does say a lot about Mike Glennon and his ability working with quarterbacks. Now you have a different quarterback coach, and Eli Manning hasn't necessarily continued his production. So, you know, that would be one area to turn. Do they decide they want to change up the quarterback coach position? Possible. I'm sure they're going to look at every which angle, every tie-in to Eli Manning and what they can do to get him back to the level of a solid quarterback.
All right. Okay, well, I agree with most of what you guys say. The other last complaint about drafting Nassib is that they lost a roster spot. I mean, they could have had because they signed Nassib, they lost their ability to have someone else who might be more useful on the roster. I mean, they lost that special teams guy, the linebacker, whatever his name was, to the Cowboys.
Bosworth, you're talking about.
Maybe that was the guy, to be honest.
Yeah, he went to Dallas.
I'm saying that I put a lot of this, it's got to be put in the blame for the schlamazel, which is also a Japanese word.
Boy, you love throwing out these terminology today, Larry. I got to give you a lot of credit here. Spicing things up.
It's a reach, man. I'd say that if you got the problem's gonna be that you're not gonna be able to get rid of Reese because the next GM's gonna want to probably bring in his own coaching staff. And I agree with pretty much everything you've been saying, that Coughlin is the guy to hang on to, and I don't think that Gilbride is really the problem.
All right, Larry, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for reaching out to us from Tokyo, Japan. We always like.
And if it wasn't so expensive, I would spend. I would have chewed on you here a little longer. But
I hear you, Larry. Well, listen, we appreciate the effort, and we encourage you to chime in on future Big Blue Kickoff live shows. Certainly, it's always nice to hear from our international fan base, and we know a show like this helps you stay connected to the Giants. One thing I just want to piggyback off of Larry's point that he brought up before we head to more calls and we head back to Twitter. And by the way, John Schmelk has conveniently rejoined us.
And by the way, before, take a guess, what day and time is it in Japan currently?
Oh, that's what you were dying to throw out here.
I was.
Why don't you
I want you to take
throw
a
it out there. Well, what, Tokyo's got to be about, what, a 10-hour difference, 12-hour difference? It's not that much, is it?
What do you think the day and time is in Tokyo, Japan?
I want to say it's, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night?
It is 12:30 a.m. on Wednesday.
So there we go. I was close.
Hey,
in the ballpark. Yeah.
Anyway, so you were piggybacking. Before I interrupted you.
Well, he was talking about that Ryan Nassib has taken away a roster spot from another guy. And one of the things that we talked about in great detail throughout the season.
Among others, by the way.
Correct. Aaron Ross and Sean Rogers. Two guys that were placed on IR relatively early. There's a good chance you keep them on the roster if you don't hold three quarterbacks. Is that fair?
Can you throw Dan Connor into that mix too?
True. Yeah, Connor got hurt in week one.
And he's playing now. So there's another guy. Then again, you got John Beeson, so that loss maybe not as bad, but the point stands.
So that's where they really hurt themselves. And the Giants do not have a track record of keeping three quarterbacks. They don't. And Larry threw out about, you know, keeping David Carr. They had Carr and Manning for all these years. They decided to go with Curtis Painter. And they obviously drafted Ryan Nassib. It was an interesting direction, considering that's never happened. And you know, that's something that you would assume they would consider changing up. But one of the reasons why they were forced to keep three quarterbacks, number one, you're not going to cut a guy that you just drafted. And number two, if Nassib was ready to be a backup, John, you're not keeping Curtis Painter. But because he's not ready to be a backup, you needed an insurance blanket. You needed that security blanket. That's why they were forced to keep Curtis Painter.
Because the theory before the season, let's say Eli gets like a minor ankle or a knee and he has to miss a couple of weeks or, you know, breaks a finger or something small like that, bruises his ribs, whatever. And you need a guy to just, you know, be a game manager, not make mistakes, and, you know, keep the Giants in games for two or three games over the course of the season. You want a guy that's a veteran that knows what he's doing to be a reliable vet to get you through those games, and the Giants didn't think Ryan Nassib was ready to do that. And quite frankly, Lance, based on what we saw at practice and training camp and in preseason games, Nassib didn't look ready to do that. And that's why they had to keep three quarterbacks. And I'm willing to say that next year the Giants will not have three quarterbacks. If Ryan Nassib is not ready to be the backup next year, I believe, much like they did with Woodson a couple years ago, he will be cut loose and he will not be on this roster. That's my guess.
You can't afford to keep three quarterbacks next season, given the issues that they have on this team and how you need to beef up the depth chart. It's not a luxury you can afford to have. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the lines. Jim is in Pennsylvania. Jim, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys? I really enjoy your program.
Thanks,
Jim. Appreciate that, Jim.
I'm also a longtime Giant fan. I go back to Y8 on the guys there. Just a guy from Tokyo, Larry, he hit on what I was, my main point was Eli needs a quarterback's coach. He hasn't had one since Sullivan, and they had Chris Palmer before that. And I think I would make a world of difference. And also, I'm not that happy with Gilbride anymore either. So I think that's the two most glaring problems that I see.
Well, it's something that the Giants need to take a look at. You need to look at Manning as an individual. You need to look at the talent around him. And you're right, Jim. You have to look at his quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator. And those are questions and things that will be up for discussion in the offseason, because there has to be a reason why Eli Manning has dropped off. And I don't think there's one solid answer. I don't think you could just say, sure, well, it's because of his decision-making. No, it's also because of the O-line and it's a bunch of other factors. So that's why they're going to have to step back and evaluate all of those things.
That's right. You're correct. And I think they need some, you know, like the NFL is a copycat league, and they need to get some big receivers, and you need to get a athletic tight end in there.
Yeah,
that's,
you know what?
A big part of the game.
Jim, you cannot be more right. To me, what the Giants have to do this year in the draft, besides address the offensive line, I think you need to get another end rusher in here, and I think you need to find a franchise-type tight end to play that position that can catch, that can block, and do everything you need him to do and be here for a bunch of years. I think that's very important.
Exactly. I agree with you. You guys have a good holiday season here.
You as well.
Thanks,
Jim. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it.
This really has been a schlamazel. I agree.
Wow, boy. He also threw out chutzpah too, Larry. He's really shaping his vocabulary there.
Going with the Yiddish from Tokyo.
Correct, exactly. Trying to sell it off as a Japanese word, which was quite creative.
Yes,
but we do know that it has its Yiddish ties.
Both, I believe.
Very
correct?
Good. I'm impressed that you have that type of knowledge. So, look at you, man.
I'm a multicultural fellow.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, I overestimated you.
Underestimated you.
Yeah, well, a little about that.
You are.
I know. It's been
you
one
are
of those
funny
mornings.
This morning, dude.
Oh, boy. Why don't you take over?
201-939-4513. Eric's in Pennsylvania. Eric, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, buddy?
First time through. You know, I was thinking about how abysmal the defensive line was last year, and they made this commitment that they were going to do whatever it took to stop the run. And they beat up. They got Mike Patterson. I believe they got Colin Jenkins.
Jenkins is the big one there, yeah.
Yeah, and the Giants, I mean, for all their other deficiencies, they did pretty good on the defensive line in terms of stopping the run.
Yeah,
up until late, they weren't much of a sack machine, but they committed to doing that, and I'm just wondering if they commit to make the same commitment to the offensive line this year. If you look at the Giants' offensive line, they look like skinny boys next to some of the other offensive lines that you see. They look like they're smaller, and they couldn't run block. The other aspect, too, is also look at what John Beeson did for the defense. They needed a leader besides Antrell Roll. They needed a leader that was closer up to the line. Look what they lost when they lost Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs. Those guys were obvious offensive leaders. They were demonstrative. Eli's not going to do the pregame chant. It's not going to happen. They need an offensive guy like that. Maybe it's Brown. Who knows? But they need somebody to get the offense revved up.
Well, that's never been Eli Manning's style. He's never been a vocal guy in terms of being within the locker room and, you know, trying to ignite the flames within everybody. So you're not going to get that out of them and out of him. And, you know, as far as needing that on offense, you could bring that up as a valid point and say, yeah, maybe they need that vocal leader. But I think they have it on defense, and it's not as if Antrell's role only focuses on the defense. I mean, he addresses the whole team, and they have that somewhat on special teams. So it just needs to translate over to the offense, as you pointed out.
Yeah, and it just seems like they made the commitment to the defensive line last year. They got beef, they got weight, they got talent, and Eli basically is gun shy. He's running for his life. He's understanding what his dad had to go through in playing for the Saints, and that they need that to make that same commitment to the offensive line. It ain't going anywhere.
Offensive line has been a huge issue,
and it has to be the number one priority this offseason. It has to be.
Yeah. I mean, did Hakeem Nicks all of a sudden not have talent? You know, did Cruz all of a sudden stop being able to catch a pass? I mean, no, it's because it all starts with the offensive line. If that's out of sync, everything is out of sync.
Look, everything starts up front. That was one of the reasons the Giants were the best team in football back in 2008, because their offensive line was dominant, and you're right. That's one thing they have to go about fixing this offseason, whether it's in free agency or the draft. The Giants need, much like the defensive line last year, and I think that's a great comparison, they need to put significant resources into fixing that problem, and I think they will.
Well, you know, everybody thinks they can run the team better than the people who run the team, but if you're really realistic, they, for the most part, know what they're doing.
And you're 100% right. I mean, they need to address that issue. I think it goes without saying. That's going to be an area that we don't even have to speculate. I think that they see the writing on the wall. They're not going to overlook that section of this team anymore.
Hey, look, Jim, and Jim, early in the show, we talked about the finances of it, Eric. I'm sorry. And just if you're going to commit $20 to $25 million a year to your quarterback in Eli Manning, you have to do everything you can to maximize the output of those dollars. So in order to do that, you're right. It starts with the offensive line. And, again, I think it's very important to get a tight end in there, too, that can also catch but also block, because the tight end blocking role is also a big part of what happens up front with protection and the running game.
Well, they said Adrian Robinson was going to be the tight end version of JPP. What's his story?
Well, that's a very good question.
There is silence for a reason, because, quite frankly, nobody's seen a whole lot of Adrian Robinson. He's been hurt a ton. He's never been healthy since he's been here. That's limited his exposure and his experience. And the result of that is, quite frankly, is I don't think he's got the playbook down yet. I think if you put him out there, I think he's going to look kind of lost, and I think that's a big issue. And he's a guy that didn't come out of a pro system in Cincinnati. He never played on the line of scrimmage there. He didn't catch many passes at Cincinnati either. He was a very raw player, and quite frankly, he's still a very raw player after two seasons. And I think that's a criticism of the player for not picking things up a little bit quicker, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. Is Snead done?
I think Chris Snead's going to retire. That's just me. I mean, he could try to make his way back after yet another hip surgery, but even before the surgery this year, he wasn't moving around well. He's a veteran. He's been an all-pro type of player. He's done it for a long time in this league and done it well. I'm not sure if he's going to want to go through another offseason of crazy rehab to get back and then come back and, because of all those injuries, maybe be a shell of himself and not play good football. So in my opinion, and again, this is just an opinion, I don't know anything, I think Chris Knee is going to retire.
Yeah. Also, have you seen what he does for the salary cap? I don't know if he still is, but at one time he was like the second or third highest paid player on the team.
You know what? We can look up what Chris Snead's number is for next year.
At one time he got more than Eli.
Chris Snead, he could be voided this coming year.
Oh, there you go.
He's due just under $7 million, and you can void that.
Yes. So it'll be voided, and if he does come back, it'll be at a much lower number.
That might be able to buy a lot of talent for offensive line.
It's possible. Well, the other thing is, even if Snead comes back, Eric, you need to bring in depth. It doesn't matter. You can't bank on Chris Snead playing 16 games, even if he decides he wants to continue his career. So that element shouldn't necessarily change the Giants' game plan moving forward.
Right. Well, Reese is always saying, I'd rather get rid of a player a year early than a year late, and I think they might have that ship might have sailed.
Well, time will tell with respect to what they need to do.
Well, I think they had to bring Chris Snead back just because they didn't trust anybody behind him at guard. And I think we've seen that play out this year with the performance of James Brewer since he's gotten put into the starting lineup.
And remember, they didn't have a lot of cap space, Eric, heading into last offseason.
Right.
That's why they gave a lot of guys one-year contracts. They couldn't lock them up.
Yeah, I heard they do have they are kind of cap friendly for this upcoming year. Is that correct?
That's correct. Saw a couple people ran the numbers. I haven't looked at them quite yet. I refuse to delve too quickly into free agency while the season's still going on. We're going to have a month and a half to do – we're going to have, heck, 2 months to do that before the new NFL league year starts. So once we get to the end of the season, we get to January, we'll go through the numbers a little bit, figure out exactly what the Giants' resources are going to be. But they're going to have more than 20 guys that are free agents on this team, so they're going to be able to make significant personnel changes, Eric.
Well, hey, thanks a lot for the airtime, guys.
You got it, Eric. Anytime. Appreciate it. Have you gone through the picks yet, by the way, for this
No, I have not. I actually should bring that up. Take a look. One other thing I wanted to point out on a more serious note, considering what Eric had brought up about some of the communication issues. Eli Manning had some interesting comments when he addressed the media yesterday, and one of the things that I picked up on was he was talking about how the execution is there during practice. I don't know if you've noticed this. And then they get out on the field, specifically this Sunday against the Seahawks, and there are guys that don't know what play and how to go about executing that play. Now, that was rather disturbing when Eli Manning alluded to that.
You know what?
And I'm paraphrasing.
You know what? I did not see that quote. Let me bring up the transcript here, and I'll take a peek, because that is interesting. I was in and out of the locker room yesterday. We had a couple things going on with Sean O'Hara. We were shooting the web segments at the same time the locker room was open yesterday. So I was kind of in and out of there a little bit. So I didn't have a huge amount of time to take a look at the transcripts yet. But – look, I think what happens is that,
you know,
the old quote is that your battle plan never lasts more than 5 minutes once, you know, you get into the fog of war, to use that simply as a metaphor for the situation. And I think
the language we're throwing out on today's show, my goodness.
And I think that's what happens with these guys when they get out there, and they might know the play, but then they have to make the adjustments they need to make once they get out there. Maybe the defense does something a little bit different. And maybe some of these younger guys just don't know how to make those adjustments. And you know what? That's partly coaching, but that's also innate football intelligence and instincts that you have to have. And I was talking to somebody about this last night, actually, and they had a great point. They were talking about the NFL Football Life episode with Bill Belichick. And Belichick and Jimmy Johnson were having a conversation when they were on Jimmy Johnson's boat doing the fishing, right? And they were talking about Charles Haley. And Jimmy Johnson was talking about when he went to get Charles Haley. And, you know, people are like, he's out of his mind. He's crazy. He can be a disturbance in the locker room, which is all true. Charles Haley is a crazy, you know what. He is out of his mind. He's crazy. But the one thing Jimmy Johnson was told, he is a smart football player. He knows what he's doing. He can adjust. He knows how to look at tape. He knows how to translate that knowledge to the field. And he's smart. And the conclusion that the two coaches came from is that I'll sacrifice athleticism if you give me a smart football player with good instincts and know how to play. You can win with those guys. It's the dummies that go out there and do the wrong thing that'll lose you football games. That's why a guy like Chase Blackburn, for example, last year is so valuable. A guy like John Beeson is so valuable because he's smart and his football instincts are so sound. Same for a guy like Anshar Roll, who just instinctually can get to the right spot and make the right play. Those guys and football smarts and instincts to me are just as important as all those dopey measurables they have at the combine, like the broad jump and the high jump and the bench press. Give me a guy that's smart, that knows where to go, knows to be, knows how to react. You're going to have a football player that you can win with.
And that can make up for a lack of talent.
No question. Easily.
Can help compensate for that.
Did you find the quote?
I did find the quote.
What do you got? Read it for
me. Well, he was asked about Tom Coughlin came out and was questioning the execution and the pride and everything like that. So this was Eli Manning's answer. He goes, I think it shows that when you play a good defense, you can't have mental mistakes and you can't have people doing the wrong thing. That's just your personal preparation. That's your job. If you get beat, that's one thing. If you get outplayed, that's one thing. But to not know your assignments and do things incorrectly, or to do things wrong that have been corrected a number of times, that's kind of where you get upset about things and frustrated. There's a few of those plays, and that's obviously something that we're trying to fix. Make sure guys are staying focused, doing everything we have to do to give ourselves a chance to perform at a higher level. That's the first time
that's damning
that I have heard something this season where a quarterback or even another positional player is claiming that guys are going out there and they look lost, essentially.
which is what the fans have quite frankly been seeing for a lot this year. And, you know, I don't know who he's referring to there. And Eli, very wise, in order to avoid controversy,
correct,
not naming any names or position groups. But it makes sense. I mean, there's a reason this offense hasn't executed well this year. It's because of things like that.
But part of it is you're playing guys that you were not anticipating having to go out there due to injuries. And that's why when...
It's only a couple of them, Lance. There's only a couple of them. Brandon Myers was going to be your starting tight end. Your wide receivers have been healthy pretty much all year. Pugh and Beattie were going to be your starting tackles. Booth is going to be one of your starting interior offensive linemen. Andre Brown is going to be one of your two rotational running backs.
But you move these guys around.
You're looking at two guys. Two.
James Brewer.
That's one. And then David Deal was a veteran.
Yeah,
but
that could screw up the whole offensive line, though.
Well, I'm aware. I know. But
and that's why people are claiming that Adrian Robinson deserves playing time. If Eli Manning's saying some regular starters look lost, why would you want to throw Adrian Robinson out there?
Get people killed, especially next week against the Lions.
That's the scary thought.
It is.
It's more about guys getting hurt at this point in these final two games. Forget the execution of what they can gain out of these two games. You just want to make sure that these guys get out in one piece.
And that, to me, is the best argument. That's the argument that people aren't making in terms of resting Eli Manning the rest of the year. It's not to see what Nassib can do. It's to prevent some type of injury to Eli. And, you know, he's never been hurt over the course of his career. So you would think he'd be able to avoid it for two more games. But against a team like the Lions, who, by the way, not only are good on the defense line, but are very chippy and do some things that can be considered outside the rules at times. Do you want Eli having to worry about rehabbing some type of shoulder injury for 6 months and not being able to work on the things that made him have a poor season this year? Isn't that the worst thing that can happen? I mean, look at the Redskins with RG3. It's the reason they're doing what they're doing. Besides Mike Shanahan's mind games, I think he's just having a lot of fun messing with Daniel Snyder's head.
But there's a big difference between RG3 and Manning. RG3 needs the developmental reps. Manning doesn't necessarily need the developmental reps. He needs more reps to work out the kinks.
Right.
But I think as long as you have a full offseason and you maybe change things around him, you can get over that.
Fair.
Eli, in these last two games, yeah, you want him to gain some confidence as a quarterback, but...
Is something really going to change this season at this point?
I don't really know if it's a big benefit.
Let's go through the picks. Dan and I got to get... We have a big staff meeting today in about 5 minutes that we have to get to. It's high-powered. You are not invited.
Yes. And clearly, I'm all worked up. Let's see. Atlanta won, so
I picked
Washington,
that.
So we were wrong on that.
Well, you know, Washington outplayed them, too. The Redskins really should have won that football game.
Well, if somebody decided to play for overtime, who knows what happens. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, another way Shanahan's just messing with Daniel Snyder.
Everybody picked Philadelphia, so everybody was wrong with that.
Wow.
Everybody picked Dallas. Everybody was wrong with that.
0-3?
Miami. Nele, the only person to pick the Dolphins.
Wow. This is a rough week.
This is a rough week. And one person picked Baltimore. That would be Mr. Dan Salamon. So he gets that one right.
Wow.
Everybody else picked the Lions. Upset specials. Let's see here.
So this is really what's going to be the difference maker for this week, huh?
Tennessee lost. Chicago won. Chicago was an underdog against Cleveland.
Believe it or
not, positive
about
that?
A 2.5-point underdog.
You're not trying to pull a fast one on us?
I double-checked it.
Boy, that is highly suspect.
I could show it to
you.
Yeah,
I'm not really liking that. I got to go back.
You allowed it.
Well,
I'm
not necessarily looking over the spreads. I'm taking your word for it.
I'm an honest fellow.
But that, to me, doesn't sound right.
They were a 2.5-point underdog on the road at Cleveland.
I don't know. Something doesn't add up there. All right, Pittsburgh won, so DeTino got his upset special. Wait a minute. How was Pittsburgh a favorite over Cincy?
No, they were underdog to Cincy. That's the point. They're upset special. So we picked Pittsburgh.
That's right. I'm trying to make sure that everybody's following the rules. I didn't look at these upset specials that carefully.
Yeah, apparently.
I picked Tampa Bay, so I was off on that one. And then, Dan, you picked St. Louis.
Yeah, I thought about picking St. Louis, too. That was actually going to be my upset if I didn't pick the Bears, but whew.
Not a lot of victories at all across the board.
If you'd like to see it, Lance, come over. You can lean over. If you see the Cleveland -2.5 there.
Minus two. All right.
There you go.
So three upset specials were correct out of the five.
So did you go 0-6?
Yeah. 0-6.
That's a rough weekend
for
Lance
Meadow.
Yeah, it
is a rough week. Yeah. Big donut.
I went 1-5. Oh,
DeTino got one win.
I got one
win. Dan got three, so he went 3-3. You got one.
Wow.
And Nele got one.
What a wipeout week.
So Dan steals it with a 3-2 record.
Wow. That's bad. That's really bad.
Rough week for everybody.
So are you going to make us pick all the games these last 2 weeks?
Yeah, because that's the only way to spice things up last 2 weeks. Well, in order for anybody to make ground, you have to go with every game.
Yeah, I'm picking every game.
Plus, remember, we have some uneven totals because 1 week somebody decided that they wanted to back up somebody else. Without naming names here, this is the drama that goes on behind closed doors at the Giants training.
Politics on Giants.com.
Yes, unbelievable. Yes. We could have a whole show on the politics alone surrounding this show. Forget the X's and O's. You want to break down Eli Manning, Giants fans? We can break down the inner workings of this whole crew.
We can bring on, like, Chuck Todd. It can be our correspondent to, like, break it down.
It's unbelievable, the drama that we got to deal with.
Wrap this sucker up.
Well, you need to head to this big staff meeting,
powwow,
which clearly is going to break down barriers and set the tone for the final two games.
Well, Dan Salmon's going to be the big one in the middle of this meeting.
I can tell.
He has a lot of things he has to answer for, so.
And you seem so animated for this. A lot of meetings you're trying to squeeze in, by the way, in one morning. Sure this is not a little overwhelming for you?
It is a little bit, actually. Okay. I'm not on a lot of sleep here.
It's rough.
I'm still recovering from Mike Woodson's fourth quarter coaching decisions.
Yes. Well, we've gotten some feedback on Twitter. They thought you would make a statement of some sort.
It'll be up on WFAN.com.
There you go.
Later, you can check it out.
Save the good material, as I say. Save the good material. No reason to waste it on this show.
That is true.
With that being said, we will be back on Friday, John and I. We'll also have Big Blue Hits later in the day, where we will break down the Lions.
That's correct. 4 o'clock.
Nita Marks, Paul Dottino with you the next 2 days. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every morning at 9:30. You can also, by the way, listen on the phone app.
That's right.
You can't get to your computer,
iTunes,
or the internet. So there are other options.
Your Android marketplace,
correct,
perhaps.
We are stepping up from a technological standpoint.
Little podcast.
There you go. John?
Dan Salamone will mime the show for you on video on Giants.com as well.
We have a lot of talented characters around here.
We have contacted the interpreter in South Africa to maybe step in here and help us out with something. Be good times.
Amazing.
Dude, that story is unbelievable, by the way. Can you believe that? That is out of control. Out of control.
Yeah. All right.
Goodbye.
I think we're ready to wrap up this sucker. With that being said, for John Schmelkopf, Lance Meadow, have a good one. We'll see you Friday.
Peace.